Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you've joined. I want to get quickly to our guests this morning to talk about the subject that we have no choice but to make the center of the show today, which is the video that was released just a few days ago of five African-American Memphis police officers beating another African-American man, Tyre Nichols, to death. Part of the reason I want to get quickly to our guests is I'm out of words, I'm out of ideas, I'm out of inspiration to really have much to say about all of this. We have done this over and over on this show. We've done this over and over in this city. We've done this over and over in this country, talking about the absolute terrifying peril that African Americans face from policing. But the other reason that I want to get quickly to our guests is that the subject to me today that's most important is what I'll call internalization. And I mean that in a couple of different ways. One is the internalization, I think, of every American of the idea of white supremacy in this country. This is a nation that was founded on the idea of black inferiority, and it has struggled for every day of its existence to get beyond that. And along the path, that has meant that every institution, every social class, every cultural marker, and yes, every individual is pretty infected by the idea of black inferiority. I don't think we can talk about the death of Tyre Nichols without thinking about that, without talking about it. But the other way I mean internalization is as a reflection of the way I feel and the way I think a lot of people are feeling. I haven't been able to watch the actual video of these police officers beating Tyre Nichols to death. And I have to say that the reason I can't watch is because these are African-American men brutally killing another African-American man. I don't know how to process the feelings that I have about that. And I know that watching the video won't help me get to any sort of sane understanding of it or to any sane processing of emotion about it. It's unfathomable. It's a word that I don't use an awful lot. And so we've organized today's show, at least most of it, around the idea of discussing that internalization in both ways. And the best way to do that, I think, is to talk to other African-American men about what happened, what we're seeing, and what we're feeling. The emotions that all of us, I think, are experiencing right now are just overwhelming. We want to hear from you, too, our listeners, about what your reaction is to this video, to this killing. Call and tell me if you're doing better than I am. Maybe your anger is at the center of your emotions, and that's not confusing. You know where to direct that. Maybe you have a way to process the sadness in a healthier way than I have been able to. We want to hear about that. Tell us how you're doing, how you taking all of this in and making sense of it. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. I want to introduce the two guests that we have, but also preview what's coming up a little later in the show. We are going to talk with State Senator Stephanie Chang, who represents Detroit and some of the suburbs of Detroit in Lansing. We're going to talk to her about the work that she has been doing on police reform in the state legislature. That's also a pretty important conversation. But first, I want to introduce John Sloan III, who is a co-lead organizer with Black Lives Matter Detroit. He is director of operations and administration for the Detroit Safety Team. John, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning. Good morning, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Greg Bowens. He is a political and communications consultant, a longtime friend of mine, a longtime commentator on all kinds of things here in Detroit and Metro Detroit. He's also a co-founder, I believe, of the Grosse Pointe NAACP chapter. I think he is a co-founder. I know he's one of the founders, at least, of that. He may be the sole founder of it. Greg, welcome to Detroit Today as well.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate being here. And, man, powerful opening.
Yeah. I want to start with that idea of internalization. And I want us to really talk about what that means and what that looks like. John, I'm going to start with you, but tell me first how you're dealing with the second part of that internalization that I was talking about. I want to know how you feel and how you're feeling and how you're processing feelings about all of this.
Yeah. You know, I, like you, I have not watched the video. I have read articles and I've been on phone calls with other activists and organizers across the state, but I couldn't bring myself to watch it because I am angry, Stephen, and being a black man in sitting in anger is dangerous. And so I try not to lead into that, right? I try to find ways to center myself. But I don't think we need to watch the video to understand the brutalization that occurred. And I don't think we need to re-traumatize ourselves by witnessing someone being killed to understand how gross and insidious white privilege is and racism is in our country, and how it is at the core of our system of policing. And I want to make sure I say that again. Racism and white privilege is at the core of our system of policing, and we don't have any further to look than in this situation when it wasn't five white officers, but it was five black men. And there's a cognitive dissonance, I think, that is hard to process. There's there can be an ability to say, well, this is, you know, five black men and one black man. There can be no racism here. There's a way in which I think we might refuse to accept that this is the reality. But to your earlier point, we have so internalized this inferiority, this concept of inferiority, that we are now expressing that. And we have expressed that in a lot of other ways culturally. But it's coming out violently through our system of policing and putting us at risk.
Greg, same question. Tell me first how you're feeling, how you're internalizing all of these things, and then tell me what you make of what happened and how these men, these black men, came to be the ones who took the life of another black man for reasons we still, I think, don't quite know or understand. And I don't think there's anything on this videotape that's gonna answer that question. But Greg, how are you feeling?
Well, today, to be honest with you, I feel a little more hopeful. And I say that from the perspective, in part, based on the remarks that we just heard from my colleague here on the show with me about being able to recognize the situation for what it is. And that is a stark example of how institutionalized racism, you know, rears its ugly head and impacts us very deeply. Now, I do have to say that I watched the video. I was watching Joy Reid.
So and, you did you know, watch the video?
Oh, yeah. I definitely watched it. And it was really hard to watch it because of the way that it ended. We knew how it was going to end in a death. But when it starts and, you know, they just run up on the guy, stopped at a stoplight in the left turn lane, and start screaming MF this and all this stuff and just yank him out of the car while he's trying to be calm. He's like, hey, you know, what did I do? What did I do? And being very calm. And they when it starts, there's a white officer involved. The camera angle is from the white officer's car and then his vest. You know, so you see his hands moving around. And but I really want to encourage everybody within the sound of my voice to watch that video. And the reason why I say that is because it is important for us as people to bear witness, to really bear witness and not just talk in an abstract sort of way about the things that happen. But we were there. And when you're there, you are touched in ways that I think that give us the courage to face the ugliness that exists today. And so I did not want to watch it. You know, if someone would have said to me, do you want to watch this video? No, I don't want to watch it because I don't want to, you know, be traumatized in some kind of way or just jump on a bandwagon. But I think it's important for us as people, particularly as Black men, to see what happened to our brother at the hands of our brothers. And to hear the words that were spoken, because you get the feeling and you get the anger and you get the angst and you're wondering, you know, why? Why did this happen? And you hear the voices of our brothers who are yanking this young man out of his car. And you hear what they say. And then when it goes to the camera on the pole and you see these people, you know, doing what they do, standing him up, two guys lifting him up as he's handcuffed so another brother can hit him. You know, all of this becomes very, very real. And I think that we have an obligation. We have a duty to bear witness. This man paid for this with his life to show us what's going on. Yeah. And so I don't think that we can turn away from it. I encourage you, both of you brothers, to check it out.
That's such a powerful argument to make in favor of watching, and you're pulling at all of the you know, the tensions that I've been feeling about it over the weekend. I mean, number one, look, it's my job to watch that video, right? It's my job to be informed as much as I possibly can about things like that. But I just have not gotten there. And you know,
I can feel you on that. Let me say this. We bring a different perspective as African American men to the experience of watching it. The inflections of the voice, the words that they use, all of that, that's us. That's us. Mm-hmm. We know it. We've said it. We felt it. And it's important for us to bear witness to that incident because he paid for it with his life. And, you know, and I say I'm hopeful because this moves us beyond some sort of academic argument about what's going on and puts us in that place to say, one, I will never do that. Two, I will hold myself and each other accountable for those kinds of situations, because the anger that's expressed and the actions that happen on lower levels in other interactions, mm-hmm. in the way that we treat each other as brothers and sisters.
Yeah. John, I really want to get your reaction to what Greg is saying. And you're like me, someone who hasn't brought themselves to watch it. Are you persuaded by what Greg is saying? And also, you know, it's so confusing sometimes to be Black and American. Mm-hmm. You know, I see all this debate online about some people saying these people weren't really Black because look what they're doing, and they're blue, right? They're part of a blue institution that supports and furthers white supremacy. You have other people saying, look, they're Black. They're doing the same thing as what white cops would do. This proves it's not racism. It's just about power. I mean, boy, those are just, I mean, they're such convoluted ways of thinking about things.
Right.
But does any of that convince you that we, like Greg says, that we owe it to ourselves and to America to see this?
So I think, listen, I appreciate what my brother is saying, and I intellectually agree and understand, right? So there are two sides of this conversation that we have to have. I think the way that we're thinking through how this moment can be motivational, how it can give us additional insight, how we can use moments like this, like what happened to George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, to propel movements and progress. And to that instance, how we can then honor the memory and the legacy of those individuals, of those fallen heroes. There's also the emotional component of how you as an individual have to take care of yourself, right? And, you know, you're the only person that can understand your kind of innate level of trauma or PTSD with which you're walking through this world. So whether or not somebody chooses to watch the video, I understand all sides of that argument, and I probably will at some point watch that video. To your second point, though, Stephen, I really would like for us to avoid, as a community, having conversations around qualifications or standards of Blackness.
Hmm. I agree.
You know, there's no litmus test. It's not like, I grew up in the 90s, so there were a lot of conversations I had when I moved into the suburbs, into Farmington, with my folks around being an Oreo, or what it meant to speak a certain way or dress a certain way, or how that made you more or less of a Black person. And I don't think we can take an easy way out and say, oh, well, these brothers aren't brothers because they're wearing this uniform, because they behave this way. Mm-hmm. What we have to do is take the hard conversation and look at where that behavior comes from. What is that behavioral pattern? And I think especially for a city like Detroit, where very similarly to Memphis, we have a largely Black police force, there is a insinuation that therefore racism does not exist, right? But that is to ignore the way that racism is endemic and the way that these systems are pervasive throughout society and throughout culture and have been internalized, right? I think every dark-skinned Black person of a certain age has had an experience with somebody in their family giving them like a lightning cream. Okay. Yeah. And that's something that is, I hope, no longer in practice. But that is a small example of how we have internalized racism and how we have said to ourselves there's a proximity to whiteness that we need to achieve. What these brothers did is far beyond that. But there are systems and webs that connect all of this. And so for us to look at them and say they're not of us is inaccurate. And it lets us off the hook from doing the hard work. And the hard work is sitting down and saying, okay, is there a path forward for them? Is there a path forward for others like them and how we interact with Black police officers? And is there a path forward for safety? And I'm keen on saying safety instead of security and safety instead of policing, because I firmly believe that safety and policing are not the same thing. And so how do we divest from systems that are at their foundation harmful and racist? How do we divest from systems that are at their foundation built to propel and to prop up hierarchy, and a hierarchy largely across gaps, lines of race and wealth? And how do we reinvest those resources into ourselves and into our community along these ideas of community-based safety, of centering each other as we're doing it, of making our culture and our society as equitable as possible for the least marginalized among us?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Greg Bowens and John Sloan III. We are going to get to you, the listeners, as well. Kenneth in Detroit, Tim in Detroit, Alexandria, and Harry and Sterling Heights. We will hear from you next on the phones. We'll also get to some social media comments. If you want to join us, 313-577-1019 is the number. Call and tell us what you're making of the death of Tyre Nichols at the hands of five black police officers in Memphis. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. Our guests today are John Sloan III, a co-lead organizer with Black Lives Matter Detroit. He's a founding member of the Detroit Safety Team, which works to recenter safety within the community and reduce the need for police interaction. Also with us is Greg Bowens, political and communications consultant locally here in Detroit, somebody who was a founder and past president of the Grosse Pointe and Harper Woods NAACP. We're talking about the video released just a few days ago of five African-American Memphis police officers beating another black man, Tyre Nichols, to death during a traffic stop. We should note that the reaction to that that killing in Memphis has been pretty swift. The police chief first fired those officers, and they have been charged with murder. There's also a Justice Department inquiry into the event. It's going to unfold a little differently, I think, than some other police killings that we've seen. Right now, what we're talking about is the dynamic here, what I'm calling internalization, the internalization of white supremacy and authority by these black officers. The internalization that I think many people, especially black men, but lots of other people, the feelings that this evokes, the things that all of us are trying to process, I think, after what was a pretty dramatic release of the video and then, of course, all the reaction to it. I want to hear from you as well about how you're feeling about this and what your reaction is. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. Let's first go to Kenneth in Detroit. Kenneth, what's on your mind?
Well, it happened to me. I was stopped by a Dearborn police officer. And when I saw the video, I wish you'd watch it too. But when I saw that video, it came back to me. Had I not complied and being nicer or kinder or cowardice to him, he probably would have done the same thing to me. So it hurts. And all you have to do is look at the way billing is with banks and everything to see why this occurs to black people. If they don't get you that way, they'll get you through finances. It's terrible.
So Kenneth, I want to push a little deeper into your watching of the video and recalling your own experience, how have you been able to manage that? I appreciate your encouragement of me to watch the video. I would imagine that's much harder even for you with, you know, somebody who feels like that could have been you on the video.
Well, Stardust, I watched it. I'm still hurt by it. And it was because, I'm more hurt because it was black officers that did it. But they're trained to do that, to be that way. That's their training, to be that way. I understand there are people that are bad in this city that need to be dealt with. That man, when I saw that, it didn't look like he needed to be dealt with that way. And that's why I called you. The officer that stopped me at 3 a.m, I was on my way to work at a gas station in Dearborn. He pulled into the gas station right behind me, and I was done. I pulled out, and he said I didn't stop at the coming out of the gas station is why he pulled me over. And I said, yes, I did stop. And he just went crazy on me. And I changed it. I stopped it right there. I said, sir, I'm sorry. I may have not stopped. Mm. But he went nuts on me. Mm. Had I not complied like that, he probably would have just did the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should watch Kenneth, it, Stephen. So you'll know.
You know,
you'll know.
You're not wrong, Kenneth. I should watch. It's my duty to watch. It's my job. I'm not there yet. And I'm sure I will get there and be able to do it, but I couldn't over the weekend, and I have to be honest and admit that. John, this question of authority and compliance, I think we can't talk about that without talking about the context in which it fits with policing, which is white supremacy. I mean, I've seen a lot of efforts on social media over the weekend to disconnect those two things, to say that this was just about authority, that this was just about, you know, this sort of overbearing attitude of police officers. But you can't talk about that without, as you pointed out, talking about the history of policing and how raced all of that really is.
Yeah, it's really difficult to separate the two, right? And my heart goes out to the brother that just called in. I think like a lot of black men, like unfortunately probably the majority of black men in the country, when you see those lights in your rear view, and not even just the lights, when you see police officers, when I drive down the street by police officers, I tense up, right? And there's a fear that is unfortunately coming with all those interactions. To your point, though, when we think about the history of policing, we cannot separate that from a couple things. And there's a lot of conversation people talk about, you know, slave patrols in the South and how that was the beginning of policing in the South. And that is absolutely true. But let's connect it to something a little bit closer to home in the north of the Mason-Dixon line. There's the criminalization of black and brown bodies that had been integral to the way that quote unquote safety and security was maintained. And this is kind of through the Great Migration into really current day, right? So when you're talking about the way black and brown bodies are criminalized, when you're talking about an expectation of violence, when you're talking about a topic that I think a lot of people are very familiar with right now, which is mandatory minimums, right? And the idea that there were these harsher penalties that were predetermined, right? By our quote-unquote justice system, that disproportionately affected people of color, that disproportionately affected black men. You talk about the fact that in a lot of states, including our own, you have recreational marijuana that is now available for use, but you still have thousands of black individuals, men and women, that are in prison for the way that they have used drugs. You have to think about the way the entire system has been built upon the criminalization of certain individuals, of black and brown individuals. And the way that then becomes insidious into thought process. And that is not, you know, prejudice does not care what color your skin is, right? And I'm being careful about saying prejudice versus racism. Mm-hmm. But prejudice can seep into anyone and can be taught to anyone. Racism is the way that prejudice, that prejudicial thought, becomes actualized endemically within a system to someone else's benefit. And so this is entirely about the way that these black men have learned prejudice, have learned to enact upon the perceived inferiority of their own race, of members of their own race, and to leverage that towards the benefit not of themselves and not of other black people, but towards the benefit of a system of racism and white privilege, and continuing to prop that up. And that's what we saw.
Yeah, yeah. Greg, your efforts to start the NAACP chapter and Harper Woods and Grosse Pointe was tied at least a little into this idea of the interactions between police and citizens, and of course African Americans are a growing part of the population in Grosse Pointe, and so those interactions with police are increasing. This idea of compliance and authority sits at the center of the tensions around those interactions.
In many ways, that is true. I do have to say that one of the things that we find, I believe, growing up in Detroit, growing up in a black political power structure, growing up with black mayors, black judges, black lawyers, black doctors, you know, and this idea that we are empowered because of the education that we received in school and out of school, right? And so you have these systems that are set up in the black community over time in Detroit that allows for us to be able to advocate and to do and to say. But when you move from Detroit to a suburb, pick your suburb, Birmingham, the Points, pick it, I don't care. You don't have that same kind of institutional structure, that same kind of societal structure, that same kind of body politic there to support you. And so I felt like that at the time when I was organizing it, and it was the sister who, Elaine Flowers, who was a cop who became a social worker and worked out in Port Huron and came back, had reached out to me. And I realized, you know, when she did, that she was calling for an idea of us to be able to create that kind of support system, you know? And so it's more than just about how you interact with police, but it's about how you interact in the society in which you live. Hmm. And so people have asked me plenty of times, well, why don't you just, you know, move to Birmingham, or why don't you move to some? I'm like, look, black is black wherever you are. You're not going to escape your blackness, yeah. You know? And I think that this day, this topic that you're talking about reminds us of how we are all connected no matter where we live. No matter where we live, you cannot escape your blackness. And the systems that my brother on this call is talking about are systems that are pervasive everywhere. And we have to recognize that and work together across all these geographical lines, because these lines don't erase our blackness. And they don't erase our humanity. And in fact, they give us an opportunity to work better collectively to solve these problems wherever they are. And that's why Memphis resonates with us so deeply here. You know, it's Memphis. And I've been to Memphis in a long time. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I haven't thought about Memphis as a place where I could be in danger more so than any place else, you know. But this reminds us that, yes, indeed, it don't matter if you in Detroit or Atlanta or LA or, you know, Denver, Colorado, you know, we are all subject to this kind of policing. And the fact that it happened at the hands of brothers is even more hurtful.
Yes.
And I got to say this, Stephen. You know how we like to say the N-word, right? How we make excuses for us to be able to say the N-word to each other. But if you white, or if you something else, you better not say it ever. I never want to hear that come out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. But we allow ourselves to take license. It kind of felt like that folks were taking license during that stop? You know?
The cops.
The cops. The black cops acting in a way that they felt empowered to act because they were black too. Now, I'm not trying to make a stretch here, but you don't run up on, you know, some middle-aged white dude going, hey, mama, you know, the MF this, MF that, and blah, 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 and speaking very colloquially and just, you know, while you engage in your brutality, before you even engage, you just run up on a brother, talking to him disrespectfully, talking to him like, you know, in black colloquialisms, and doing what you do, you are taking license.
I mean, that's one of the really complicated layers of all of this, right? I mean, it is very black, the interaction between these police officers and Tyre Nichols. It wouldn't have looked that way or sounded that way if they weren't black, if he weren't black. I mean, the way in which race just defines, you know, everything in terms of the way that we deal with each other in this country was just at the center of this entire encounter. I want to take one more quick call before we have to break. Alexandria Hughes is part of an organization called Michigan Liberation. Alexandria, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Yeah, this situation is just, I haven't watched the video. I can't, and I can't emotionally take it. It's just too many videos, too traumatizing. For me, it saddens me because I think about how this interaction is the most common one we have with our legal system. And that scares me also, because that puts me at risk. That puts my family members at risk. I have, you know, 4 younger siblings. Mm-hmm. You know, I have brothers, a lot of brothers, and they're all black. And I think about that every day. And I think about how us as taxpayers are putting our money into law enforcement. And we should all be disgusted by that.
Yeah. Yeah. Alexandria, really appreciate the work that you do in our community, but also the call. Okay, we are going to take another quick break. John Sloan and Greg Bowens, it was really important for us to have both of you here today to talk about this. Thanks to both of you for joining us. When we come back, we are going to talk with State Senator Stephanie Chang. She represents Michigan's 3rd State Senate District, which includes Detroit. She has been working on a number of initiatives in Lansing that have to do with police reform. We also want to continue to hear from you on phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.